Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I was on the trail of a child, brutally abducted from his village.
What's happened, Foster? Where's my son?
A trail that led to the heart of Union City.
That's from the new game, so.
Oh, what I was about to say, that was pretty good.
Yeah, they don't have any old commercials. Hey, everybody, welcome back to Play Retro. This is Play Retro. I'm Scott Johnson, one of your hosts. And when I'm beneath the steel sky, I like to point and click my way out of all kinds of various problems. Feels kind of scummy, to be honest. Get it? Scummy? A significant portion of the world won't remember this game, but I do. And now you have no choice but to listen to what I have to say underneath this steel sky.
And I'm down here, too. And I'm your other host, Brian Dunaway. And my outback gap daddy is dead. My smart-ass robot is stuck on full snark, and I just survived my second helicopter crash in one lifetime. Guess it's time to explore this very British cyberpunk city dystopia ran by a giant eye so I can get home to the crater hole that is my home. Click, click, boom.
Oh, look at you with the modern, well, 90s reference. Not modern at all, is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, why not? We're doing 90s and might as well take back the music too, right?
Yeah, let's stay in the 90s.
Soundtrack.
Yeah, let's stay click, in the 90s. Click, talk boom. About 90s thing. Man, I used to love that song. So good. Yeah. I don't even think it's that great now. I think it's probably okay, but I loved it at the time. That was great.
I totally forgot about Limp Bizkit doing the Mission Impossible theme song. Do you remember Limp Bizkit doing that Mission Impossible?
For two,
take
right?
A look around.
Was it for two or was it one? I don't remember.
I think it was two. Yeah, it was MI2.
MI2, yeah.
And I was listening to some 90s music on Spotify the other day, and it came up, and I'm like, I was jamming out too, and I'm like, wait, did I like this song? I thought I didn't care for Limp Bizkit. Wrong.
You care for him. You do care for him. You want to send them a package. You want to let them know that you love them. You should.
Yeah, I want to send them a picture of my chocolate starfish.
Yeah. Don't do that.
That's the name of the album, man.
I know, but don't do it for real. They don't want you to really do it unless, I don't know, maybe Fred Durst is into that. I have no idea.
I don't know.
But anyway.
But I think it's funny because I was using, I remember what blew my mind the most is I was using the built-in Spotify AI DJ. I don't know if you've listened to this guy, if you have Spotify or not, but they've got like a DJ he'll come up and he'll say, up next, I'm going to play some music from blah, blah, blah. And he was like talking about how this was has become a modern classic. Mm. And then he was talking about Limp Bizkit. And I was like, I haven't heard anybody talk about Limp Bizkit.
Not in that way. Yeah, I agree. Plus, those guys, right. I watched that documentary on Woodstock 99, and those guys made things worse. Oh, they poured gas on that situation. They did not help.
I forgot. You're right. I did watch that documentary. It wasn't just Limp Bizkit, but yeah, that was
real. They were the impetus, though. They got like where they needed them to be normal the most. Those guys decided to go full chaos, and it really effed things up that night.
It was not a good time to do that.
No, it was not, sir. No. Anyway, we're going to talk about Beneath the Steel Sky, and you might say to yourself, what is that? Well, PC players of the 90s know. They know. They know what this classic is.
Also, those Amiga players, too. Those European Amiga players.
Yeah, you Amiga people, you know. You know what's up. It's also a free game right now on GOG and Steam, so you can actually play that game with no problem these days, which is a nice change for something we're covering. We're going to talk about all that in a minute, but before we do, I saw an interesting bit of research. I'm not going to get into all the details, and I talked a little bit about it on DTNS and then later on Core, but I thought it was interesting to bring up here because of the retro aspect to it. There's some research out this week showing that gamers spent 60% of their time, and there's some questions about what do they mean by gamers, what's the sample size, what's the age ranges. Like, there's a lot of questions right. about the data that I hope maybe they'll spill more of the beans because it is interesting.
Do you know the source on this?
Yeah, like, it's was this good. In a magazine? Was this... No, I can tell you the name real quick. It was a weird name. I meant to put it in here and forgot. Hold on. It is. Here it is.
It's okay.
Company called Nuzu. I know.
Okay.
It sounds like they make GBA accessories is what it sounds like. But anyway, Nuzu put out this stuff.
Gaming Report.
That's right.
Gotcha.
60% of playtime in 2023 went to 6 year old or older games, meaning games that were 6 years or more old. Things like, you know, Fortnite and Minecraft and GTA 6 and or 5 rather, that kind of stuff. And it was kind of across the board, even though they were showing a 2.6 growth in the PC and console gaming market overall. Overall playtime decreased as gamers focused more of their time on older titles. I thought that was sort of interesting. Top 10 games for each platform are mainly established titles, older stuff, with the exception of Nintendo. The Switch games were a bit of both. Fortnite led the pack, but then they had, you know, Tears of the Kingdom and other Mario Kart 8 and things that, you know, I guess that is old, but it's, you know, Nintendo has their own brand of weird when it comes to these stats. And the part that they didn't really get into, the part that I thought was interesting or I think is interesting, is that I think a lot of this stuff is also indicative of people wanting to go back and play older stuff in general. And I mean a lot older. Like, the retro market has never been hotter than it is right now. If you got an old, I don't know, NES or Super NES and you put it on eBay, you're going to make more money now than you would have a year ago even. And I think retro has a big part in where, especially like where Gen Z's are. Like, my son would be just as happy to say, you know what, Dad, I'm just in the mood to play like Ocarina of Time than he is to play some new $70 game he can't afford. You know what I mean? So
yeah, it's interesting. No, it's a really good question, because this makes my synapses go blah, 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 blah. What about this? And it's like, of course, there's more people playing older games. There's a bigger library of older games than there are modern games because the depth of it. But then I'm also thinking, maybe people are looking for something, because I feel like just about every first person, I do feel like we're sitting right in the middle of a lot of sameness.
Yeah.
And we've crested
a little bit, right? The indie space, definitely different, but mainstream, like AAA area market, we're all kind of up on this weird bubble hanging out in the same sameness. No question.
And that may be true throughout history. I haven't really thought a lot about it, but it may be that always happens. And maybe that's the reason why we have like distinguished eras stuff. But anyway, but I do think there is I don't want to say a backlash, but kind of like a counterculture towards going back. Cause I've talked to many more younger people who are going that retro route, because I don't know what the simplicity of the games, maybe not having to deal with all the bullshit.
Get in, get out.
Sure.
Plus these cool devices. Like, there's never been a better time to buy a long lasting battery operated, big screen, beautiful experience thing, like an AmberNick or something that will run all these games. And let's be honest, some of them are like, and plus these ROMs they shipped with, I won't know the game.
How can you compete with that? Right.
Right.
It's because it's illegal.
Yeah. No, it's true. So it's a little bit weird. Now, you've got something that's, I wouldn't say this is related, but it is interesting. You found out this week that Google is getting rid of Retro Dojo, which is something I didn't even know they owned that. I didn't know Google had anything to do with that.
Oh, apologies. Maybe the title is misleading. So Retro Dojo is a place we occasionally go to for retro history stuff. And it's a great, they put out this great book and working on a new book. This is called A Handheld History. And so they're an online publisher of retro content as well as a physical publisher, and they have a small staff, and they've really make some really great curated content. And unfortunately, Google has nothing really to do with owning them. What has happened, though, is they became very dependent upon their income being from Google search results.
Right.
So they found early success through Google search results. And then along the way, as Google often does, they changed the game, and Google is kind of slimy. I mean, they really are. They talk about, you know, up to the creepy line or whatever it is. So, you know, Google's going to always push its way as far as it can to being a jerk. And Google has changed in the last 5 years, where if you go look for something now, there's so much sponsored stuff. It's almost impossible to find real organic content. Almost all of it feels ad driven because, you know, Google's trying to make more money.
Right.
You know, that's just, it's a for-profit business. And, but unfortunately they act like they're, you know, altruistic, and they're like, they're the perfect place. And they, you know, they're bringing all the best curated content to you because it is the best content. Lies. They take money just like everybody else. And so as a result, Retro Dodo has had all their eggs in one basket, and they're really looking at downsizing what their staff, downsizing the amount of content they're pushing out, and just maybe even at risk of being killed off completely because they just don't have a way to make money. So they're looking at other places like Patreon and stuff. But, you know, that's just, oh, that's like starting from square one.
It is. It's starting over.
A really long time. Yeah.
The only thing I would say to those guys is I wish they would have diversified sooner.
Yes.
You never want to put all your eggs in one basket. And if all your eggs were in the search results ad market, you probably were setting yourself up for trouble because Google famously changes that algorithm all the time. And in this case, here's what they say exactly. Since September of 2023, Google has hidden our site from millions of retro gamers, reducing our organic traffic and revenue by 85% and causing our business to be on the edge of going under. And they even provide charts of when this changed. And it's kind of massive, like sudden drop,
yeah.
Like bam, you're dead.
Yeah.
And it was just last, I mean, it had this curve of growth driven by their efforts, right? Not Google, their efforts to do it. All that happens with the searches is the facilitates the growth. And then they changed their algorithm back in September. It's like a truck hit a wall. Wham!
Yeah.
And a bunch of sites just went. And I don't even know. Like, it's possible that this is wreckage Google didn't know they were creating. I don't know. Because I don't know I don't know why it benefits them to hurt small sites. I don't know why that would help them. You know what I mean?
It certainly devalues. It gives it, Google is definitely cutting their nose off to spite their face, because what they're doing is they're lessening the value for me. I'm recognizing it as well. I'm using Google less and less because I do recognize that the first three or four results are all sponsored. And then they've got their own, you know, side stuff with Google that is basically scraping data from other valuable sites and putting it right there. And you're like, hey, we're just sampling it here. It's like, yeah, that's fine if you're a small player, but you're Google. You shouldn't be borrowing anything from anybody. You've got the pockets. You're going to be all right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Google's a little bit, always been slimy like that, and people push back, and maybe some things will change, but most likely nothing will. And what will have to change is Retro Dodo will have to find a way to you know, make some money elsewhere. And you just got to stay diversified, like Scott says. That's how we've survived as long as we have, and we're always on the lookout for, you know, what's coming next, what's over the ridge.
I think they would do really well in Patreon, but it's going to take some time to build it where they need it.
It's going
to
take time.
And they just,
you gotta build a community.
None of them are trying to get rich. They're all just trying to keep the site afloat and keep their jobs. And that's it. So, you know, if
I find the content compelling,
they're great. They've always been great. Their book they put out is super rad. Handheld History of Comprehensive Celebration. Look at that. Brian's got it. He's got the copy right there.
They got a new book. I'm going to get that. I'm going to subscribe their Patreon. If there's any way you can, you know, help however you can help Retro Dodo would be great, because I think it's a valuable resource, and they do the work, man. Mm-hmm. They do the real work. So if we want to avoid stuff like the bullshit AI content with very little value, we want to make sure that we're supporting curated content.
Yeah, go over there and get it. RetroDodo.com. That's where you want to go.
Yeah.
Big shout out to them. And if you talk to any of them, say, look, Play Retro loves you guys, and we'd love to send people your way. All right.
Good luck.
Let's get on to the matter at hand, which is this.
Shall we play a game?
Shall we? Well, yes. I think we
Why
shall.
Not?
Let's play Beneath the Steel Sky. Oh, that sky.
A steel sky.
You
said the. Don't get it wrong.
I keep saying the. I'll say the till I'm dead. I've always done it, even when the game was new. I don't know why I do that, but the game is considered one of the great point-and-click classics of all time. And today, we're going to talk about this dystopic future set thing developed by Revolution Software, released in 1994, big year for games. The game unfolds in a post-apocalyptic world, specifically within the confines of a towering city known as Union City, as alluded to earlier, ruled by a dictator regime and an all-seeing artificial intelligence.
Ripped from the headlines.
Yeah. I think it holds up. I only got to play, I don't know, 2 hours of this week. I didn't have time for much else. But this game's free on GOG. It's free on Steam. There's no reason not to grab it. There's a mod scene for it. There's all kinds of stuff you can do. And the game works great. Is no issues. No problem. I was pointing, Brian, and I was clicking. All right?
with no issues whatsoever. And if you want to relive those 90s, this is 90s as 90s can get. And if you're a big fan of the Sierra, which, you know, it's Lucas kind of came along and kind of like took over a little bit with the point and click stuff. And LucasArts was doing really good about this time. And here comes these guys. And it's like, let's see if we can do something in between the two.
Yeah.
Not so silly and maybe a little more serious, but still adultish.
Still
and
hard. Exactly, yeah.
What they did, Revolution Software.
Yeah. It's very, how do I put this? Trying to think who this appeals to. If you were like playing Monkey Island, the Monkey Island series, and you were like, this is just a little too goofy for me. This is a little too tongue in cheek. And then someone says, well, try
Threepwood for me.
Yeah. Or they say, let's try some Space Quest. And you go, okay, cool. And then you play that and you go, yeah, but this is also just kind of goofy. Like, I get the humor and I get why it's important, but can you give me something kind of hard edge, something a little bit more like, you know, some meat to it? Here it is.
Yeah, can you give me some good jokes like naming our primary character Robert Foster?
Yep.
Because Foster is Australian for beer.
For beer.
Because it all takes place in Australia. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Australia.
There you go. By the way, there's a bum. You see the bum?
I butchered it.
There's a little bum.
Oh,
in this
picture. Look at this. You're already showing some of the most sexy content. This is a cyberpunk setting. It's futuristic, dystopian, cyberpunk, and our character Robert Foster has one place where he has to go and get his cyber junk on, right? And so they did have these pixelated posters on screen of boobs and butts and muscles.
Yeah,
and
boobs, butts, muscles, butts. Whatever you need. Here's one now, a scene where the guy's got an open chest where some surgery has clearly taken place or will. The game, it doesn't shy away from those themes, and it's very much like, hey, Blade Runner came, let's go, let's have some Blade Runner fun. And that's what they did, and it's very good. I think the story's really great. I have not played the new game that is by all accounts, a full-on sequel to it, but I've heard things about
Beyond.
It. Yeah.
Yeah, Beyond a Still Sky came out a few years back, and it is a continuation of Robert Foster, I believe. I have not played the new one. I've never played this one, Beneath a Still Sky, until this past week. Just never got to it. And I enjoyed it. I played most of it. It's a pretty short game. You can probably get in and out of here in about, if you watch some walkthroughs, you'll definitely get out in about 3 hours. But it's about a 6-hour trip to Beneath a Still Sky from watching this beautifully unique visual fair that Dave Gibbons, you know, Watchmen guy, did the comic artwork. He brought his look to this, and it starts from all the way from the beginning when they tell the opening story about everything. There's a comic book that was included with the original, and it's online. You can get it for free and read it.
That was actually Dave Gibbons doing the art in that, right? That was all Dave Gibbons, I think.
Yes, that was Dave Gibbons' art stuff. He did the comic, and then they pixelized it and put it in your Amiga and your DOS, originally on just some floppy disk, and then eventually on some CD-ROMs. And it's just what you would expect if you ever read any Watchmen and looked at those kind of more adult themed type comics.
Yeah.
And I dug it because it's steeped in it, and it is a lot of tongue in cheek stuff. And there is a robot to go along with you. So you've got your Joey. There's a lot of Australian themes because this is where it takes place. It takes place in what's called the Gap, which is really the outback of Australia. There's apparently been a nuclear war that has occurred, and there's Union City where you can go to get some protection, and also talk a little bit about social hierarchies, which you encounter a lot as your character is stole away back to Union City, where you originally came from.
Right. Which is your home. Yeah, it's your home, man.
Out of there.
Yeah, you got to get the F out.
It's your home. And
you better start now because you never know when you're going to, whatever. That guy, the other game, by the way, the newer game is on Game Pass, so there's no reason to not try that out as
well. Oh, yes.
Things everywhere.
I do want to try that out.
I kind of want to see it, but let's talk about some audio because this thing, here, I'll play some. This is funny because the robot is featured and there is humor. I don't want to make it sound like this thing is humorless. It has its moments.
Oh, no, it is full of dumbass jokes is what I'll call it.
Kind
of,
yeah. And here's one.
My anti-stress circuit took over. It seems security have mistaken me for a guy called Overman. Why'd you suppose that security guy got fried?
Maybe we've got a guardian angel.
How could anyone mistake me, Joey?
Because you've got no personality, no distinctive characteristics. You are Mr. Potato Head.
That's just a weird thing to say, isn't it?
It really is. Now, remember, if you're listening to us talk about this very British humor, because this world's developed, Revolution was a British development company, so absolutely all their humor was baked in. But it's a little more, I won't say sophisticated, but maybe a little more raw. Maybe I don't know what the word is.
I don't know either.
An innocence to the LucasArts kind of gags. They're all kind of a little bit innocent, a little bit goofy.
Mm-hmm.
And these are a little more hard-edged kind of jokes.
I agree with that.
A lot of balls jokes.
I do. I agree. I think that it would benefit from more British accents. I think that helps the humor, and there are not many in here. Your main character, for example, is not. Everyone kind of sounds American, which is a little annoying to me. But other than
that. They re-recorded everything, Scott. They originally had, I would actually love to go back. Originally, they recorded everything with stage actors.
Oh, wow.
Which I would find very British from this time, in my opinion. When I think of stage acting, I usually think of Shakespeare and I think of that kind of stuff. So
sure.
We went with you know, more casual acting, and it's good because it does kind of fit more, because their major competitor at the time was LucasArts.
Hmm.
So they were trying to fit within that framework without being too much like LucasArts.
They make other stuff besides this, the guys at Revolution.
Oh, absolutely. They've made, it started out with over there with a game called Lure of the Temptress.
Hmm.
And it uses this game engine. It is, what was the game engine called again? I always have trouble because it's such a virtual theater, such a basic name. Yeah. Virtual theater, this game engine they started out with Lure of the Temptress in 1992. It varies from the other game engines this time, where instead of using like the verb actions like you'd see in a lot of games, you would just click on something and there would only be so many actionable things you could do and it would just do it. But the most important part was how the non-player characters responded and reacted, because they all had their own paths where they would go in and out of screens walking independently instead of waiting around for you to come talk to them. Now, not all the characters do that, but a lot of characters do, which can be both fun and frustrating, because if like he's talking right now on screen that we're watching, he's talking to one of the characters that is in three different locations, because you need to be in each of those locations to interact with this guy. So he's constantly going between those three locations, and you'll have to sometimes wait for him, or, you know, you'll have to, sometimes you need him not to be there, and sometimes you need him to be there for certain prompts.
Yeah.
So in that way, it was very revolutionary thinking to have characters independently living their own lives. It made it feel alive. But then on the other point, there's lots of times where you're like, you're in the wrong spot when you click on something and nothing happens, or the character tells you gather away. And so you may have to click three or four times to make your character move to a place in the screen that will work.
It's not perfect. It's a little frustrating. I agree with that.
A little frustrating.
But hey, it's old, and you know, when we were pointing and clicking back then, we had a lot of forgiveness in our hearts for broken shit.
Right.
At least I did.
But you did ask, that was just the first one. But they go on to do Broken Sword, and the Broken Sword series, which is much beloved as well.
And they ran that for a long time. Let's see. Broken Sword went, so the first one was 96. It was actually just after this, The Shadow of the Templars. And then they went on to do a bunch of stuff. Let's see. Here we go. Oh, they did Golden Glory, The Road to El Dorado, based on that movie. Wow.
Yes.
Then they, in 2002, they got back to it, did Broken Sword, Shadow of the Templars, Sleeping Dragon, The Angel of Death, and Shadow of the Templars director's cut, all kind of in a row from 02 to 09. 2013 to 14, they did Broken Sword 5, The Serpent's Curse, and then went quiet for a long time until 2020, 2021. You got Beyond a Steel Sky, the direct sequel to this game.
They ran into a bit of trouble, Revolution Software did. Co-founders Tony Werner, I think that's how you're saying it.
Werner. Sure.
And Charles Cecil. That's the two you hear the most about, even there's more people there. That's the two you hear the most about. And when they hooked up with the publisher Virgin, they made a contract where they had to do four more games, or four games in total, after or including Beyond a Steel Sky.
Yeah.
And so the Broken Sword series is actually the thing they wanted to do the most, but they had to finish a Beneath a Steel Sky and all this to get there. Yeah. They made some, I don't have the complete picture of that yet, because I just found out today. Every week, me and Scott try to find out where the story is of the subject we're covering. And this week, I thought it was the story within the game itself, or, you know, the unique way that that engine worked. But it actually ended up being more in the Tony Werner feel, because he wrote a book and he's had a million interviews, and you don't hear nearly as much about him. But he's chronicled the entire history of his time there at Revolution Software. And we're going to do a follow-up on this, because I missed a big part of the story, because nobody really has covered it that much. Most of the covering has been on the Charles Cecil, Dave Gibbons angle.
Yeah.
And not much about the actual company itself.
Well, it's hard to avoid the Gibbons connection. It's a little like, I've been playing the Darksiders games again, and you always forget how much Joe Madureira had to do with that stuff, because his art style is everywhere. And you forget that that's a whole bunch of people, you know, that aren't comic book artists that are all involved, and just as important, maybe more important than the guy who's, you know, doing concept art or, you know, core ideas or whatever. It's easy to just say, well, it's a Dave Gibbons joint, obviously, because there's comics and he came up with it, and these are these character designs. And they, I think we sometimes lump too much credit on, same thing. We do this with directors. We do this with, like, showrunners.
We give all the credit to who we think is the visionary. Right. We all like to go, well, who's the visionary? But sometimes that's not the whole story.
Right. Right. Sometimes you want the guy who's hidden, or the guy who's the visionary that you don't hear about very much. I always kind of respect that person, because they're not looking for that bright light. You know, they're just sort of like, no, I just want to make cool shit. I want to work with good people, and I don't need everyone's praise all the time. I think that's an admirable trait to go for.
Yes, it is. And whatever you feel about the humor, you have to either blame Charles Cecil, or you have to blame Tony Werner, or if you want to know what the mood and theme is, these two went back and forth over what they thought it should be. And so in the end, it ends up being this in-between spot that is both disturbing. There's a lot of creepiness to this game. This got this underlying creep that it's like, ooh, this guy is this is how life is. And
it's dystopic
weird,
as hell. Weird. Yeah, very dystopic.
Yeah.
The actual game artist, not Dave Gibbons, but the art in the game has a stoner in detention writing on his desk kind of vibe. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I think it works for what it is, but it is not, how do I put this? Like, it's crusty to a win here. I like how crusty it is.
Like, it is definitely 90s. You get an instant 90s vibe off this thing.
Yeah. And I love
a 90s high. I do too.
You got to huff on your 90s high once in a while to get that old feeling back. You know?
You got to.
Yeah. It's not bad.
Oh, it's not bad at all. And I'm going to go back and finish it. I finished, I'm probably about 75% done, and I was kind of afraid to find out the total ending because I was afraid I might spoil it here on the show. Mm-hmm. Because there are some spoilers. And let's just say my favorite parts of the game while playing it is my interactions with my my robot, Joey.
Yeah, of course.
Who eventually has a has an identity crisis of his own, which they explore in here, which is great. But essentially, you get to take this this computer board that has, you know, the personality of Joey, and it so much reminds me of like Claptrap from a very similar kind of dystopic future, Borderlands kind of thing.
Sure.
And so it's got to be inspired from this. If it's not, it's just, it runs parallel to it.
Sure.
And you're basically exploring this world looking for shell upgrades. So you'll transfer that essence to different shells that have different abilities through the game. So you get a sense of progression without points. Right. So you get a sense of story progression and like you're succeeding at things.
Sure.
And I really dug that a lot.
So I got a question on a technical standpoint. Do you know, were there any key differences between the Amiga version and the DOS version? Were any advantages one over the other? Anything like that?
So I believe the DOS version must have come out first, because I was reading some stuff on Moby Games. Moby Games is one of my favorite places, and I subscribe to them as well. I try to support Moby Games.
There's
development, and so there's some facts and stuff and trivia. So the programmers who did the Amiga version left some information in the main .exe file, which would have been the CD file in this case. I believe it'll be the CD file. It could have been the floppy.
Well, 94, I assume it's CD, just given the game's always had amazing audio. I don't know. I could be wrong on that.
Right. Originally, it was released on floppy, and then they shortly thereafter included the CD version, which included dialogue voices, the voice acting. The floppy version, of course, didn't contain it. But anyway, the Amiga version, they left some information in there. And you got some Beneath a Still Sky music you can play in the background, possibly. Mm-hmm. And I'll read what these programmers so cheekily said, if you would like to hear it.
Yeah, let me see if I can find a good version of this. Let's see. Beneath Steel Sky.
Now, if you look at the YouTube video for the Scum VM version, which is the next one down, I included the Scum VM soundtrack, which you can purchase separately, and we'll talk about that in just a few minutes.
Oh, that's the thing you can get? That's amazing. Cool. I like that. All right, here you go. I think I found something. Let's see how this sounds. This is all quiet. This is Union City. Oh, my gosh. It's very... Whoever recorded this did not understand... Oh, I know.
They don't understand how stuff works.
Yeah,
they're good enough.
They're confused. There we go.
Well, that's perfect. That's perfect.
Go for it.
All right. So here's what the Amiga programmer said in the .exe file. At the beginning, the programmers were happy and did rejoice at their task. For the Amiga before them did shineth and was full of promise. But then they did look closer and did seeth the awful truth. Its floppies were tiny and sloweth. Rareth was its hard drive, and so small was its memory that did at first appear large. Querieth also was a configurations. Then they dideth findeth another Amiga, and this was slightly different from the first. Then a third, and this was different again. Boy, programmers know about all of this, don't they?
Yeah.
All different, but not really better, for all were pseudo backwards compatible. But eventually it did come to pass that Still Sky was implemented on a 1 meg OS legal CBM Amiga.
Wow.
And the programmers looked and saw that it was indeed a miracle, but they were not joyous and instead did weep, for nobody knew just what had been done. So thank you for chronicling that for us, Amiga programmers.
Yeah, that's dark.
I love finding little Easter eggs like that.
That's dark
business. It is very dark.
Real quick here, the Amiga, now 38 years old in its... lifespan. I don't know if you knew this, but if you bought an Amiga 1000 in, let's see, I guess you get that year. I think you get it that year. But anyway, Amiga 1000 cost you at that time, that year, $1,295. If you bought that today, 2024, $3,670. People give so much shit to Apple these days for being what they perceive as expensive. I think you guys have forgotten that we've always paid too much for top-end crap. And here's an example of that. But anyway, the monitor, if you wanted that by itself, that was another $850, or if you wanted to add that to it. So that's in today's dollars, well, $300 then, $850 now. In today's dollars, $3,670 plus $850, that would set you up with an Amiga 1000. Nice job.
Nice job. And you know what? It was a pretty good gaming machine. Not as good as the Amiga 500, from what I understand from people, but it was good.
Yeah.
More expensive for gaming.
Remember that Amiga CD32? One day we're going to have to do like
Yes.
What was good on there and what wasn't. Because it was a console, essentially. And no longer like a full-blown computer. It was like a little thing with the ugliest controller I've ever seen in my life.
I love the... Do I have that? Hold on a second.
Do you have it? You have it handy? Because this thing... Here, I've got one for chat.
Is it this thing?
Let's see. Close. Yeah, no, that's it. It's a little different. This one, Amiga CD, is a little more spread out. I'll give you this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'll put this in our Discord. But
oh yeah, so is it, yeah, the one you have for the CD is a little variation. The one I have is that's the this is the A500, which was a more generalized.
That one's not too bad. I mean, that's not that different than a SNES controller or something. But
right.
The CD one, look how dumb that is. Look at that long ass thing with the stupid chunks down there.
We didn't know what was working just yet. We still had years to go.
I'm really curious about it. Like, I never played one. I never got my hands on one, never touched one.
Me either.
So one day we're going to have to talk about what was good on there, because I'm sure there was something.
Yeah.
There had to be something. I'm sure. Right?
Maybe we should just talk about the entire, the beginning level of all the 32 things, right? Because a lot of them were like, okay, it's time to go to disc, and we're going to go 32. And we got, the Sega had one, Nintendo was talking about having one, the Amiga had one. Maybe we could just kind of compile it into it died.
Mm-hmm.
DOA.
That's right.
32 bit.
Hey, did you ever, something I just noticed while I was watching King of the Hill the other day. I'd like you to take a look at this picture I just sent you via Discord of Peggy Hill's keyboard. What the F is going on here?
Yeah, that is the most numpad keyboard. That is so many numbs.
Oh, it's so numpad. Many everything. Look at even the other part. Look at the main keyboard. Like, what is that? Double stacked? Like, what the hell? I mean, it looks like it's supposed to be an old iMac or something, but... it's that old
it's
blue.
The old the
97 iMac, right? Yeah, jelly iMacs. Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
And then on this wall behind him, that's also a calendar with like 120 days. Like, I don't know what's going on here.
And what does she need an egg timer for? She's got a computer right there. And why is Bobby Hill having ice cream? I have questions.
There's a lot of questions.
You're right.
Her office is in the boiler room, like where they keep the water heater.
Yes.
So that's why all that shit's around. I don't know why Bobby has a gray ice cream, and I also don't know why that timer's there. But I do know that keyboard is like AI today with fingers. It's like, we just can't stop.
Yeah.
Here it all is.
It's like, how many keys are in a keyboard? I don't know. 300? Yeah, yep. That sounds right.
It's funny, though, because I'm...
600?
During this rewatch, I'm having a really good time with it. And there are a lot of game references. Like, Bobby plays a Game Boy all the time. It looks nothing like an actual Game Boy. Which is pretty funny. And it's always making beeps that were never in a game, but still, whatever.
Yeah,
I enjoy that stuff. Anyway.
I do too.
Yeah, that's a propane. Propane powered keyboards need more keys. That's what's going on there.
But speaking of, I played this week. I played Beneath the Still Sky on the Scum VM.
Yeah.
Because that's how you get it. Because in 2003, Scum approached Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
Software, and they said, we would like some compatibility, if you don't mind. And they said, we'll do you one better. Here's the freaking game. Just here's the whole thing. Here's all the audio stuff. Knock yourself out.
Yeah.
If you don't know, ScumVM is a great piece of software that allows you to play a lot of the point and click games. Do you know what ScumVM stands for, Scott?
Stands for VM is virtual machine, but the the Scum part.
Do you remember what?
I'm trying to remember. Scum stood for scripting. Hold on, I know this.
So we
scripting we computer Remington umbrella monkey.
Nailed it. So you are thinking right. It's like you do know that it's a bunch of Sierra and LucasArts games or point and click. This supports since one of the first ones they started doing. It is actually called I'm going to start over. Script creation utility for Maniac Mansion.
All right. I knew that.
I didn't know the Maniac Mansion part. I did know scum saving because that was a real popular thing. It's like, oh, I can't believe you're playing on easy mode with your scum save. You used to when you would die in a game or get stuck, you're just screwed. But
yeah, I scum save all the time. I scum save all the time. I don't care. People can bite me in the butt. I'll play like, what's the game I scum save all the time in?
It's my game.
Baldur's Gate 3. Scum save all you want. It's your game. Do what you want.
Yeah. It's your game. Yeah. Save often as you want. Matter of fact, I prefer it because nothing's more frustrating than especially in the King's Quest series. Sierra was notorious for letting you paint yourself into a corner until you're in a no-win situation. You have to like start over. So you don't want that to happen. Very frustrating.
Yeah.
And you could, I don't think you could, could you ever die in many of the Lucas games? I'm trying to remember. Anyway, I do know that it was possible to die in Beneath the Still Sky because I did it a couple of times. Once because I wanted to see, cause I thought it would be funny.
Yeah.
And it was funny.
And it was funny. Time. I'm sure it was hilarious. Yeah.
You get a kill, you get a nice little kill screen. Your character is laying there looking all dead. It's enjoyable, but I played this on the Scum VM, which is how you'll play it if you get it from Good Old Games or Steam.
Yeah,
it comes with the floppy version with no dialogue or no spoken dialogue, or it comes with the CD, which has all of it. And that's the way I played it through Steam. I think I did. Yeah,
that's where I got
mine.
I
played mine through Steam.
Yeah, did the same.
Now here's the amazing part. So it's a really good interface. Everything works just like you would think it would work. But there is a soundtrack you can buy with it. If you've played this game, you know that the soundtrack is very repetitive. It's MIDI. It's very repetitive and can get totally annoying. Let me repeat myself right there. but there's a fan-made one from James Woodcock.
Woodcock. Yeah.
It's a soundtrack. Super easy to install.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, so easy to install that I thought I was doing it wrong.
Right.
And kept insisting that I must not be doing it right.
Sure.
But for it's free if you, but as a suggested donation, $2.99. And I'm sorry, £2.99. Is that right? How do you say it?
Pounds over
two,
there.
£2.99. Whatever's.
Yeah.
Pence.
Yeah.
But anyway, equals about $5 US.
Yeah.
So I gave him the $5. I downloaded the soundtrack. And you're like, Brian, why don't you spend $5 in a free game? And it's like, well, the game wasn't, you know, this guy's got to make his money too now. James Woodcock needs his Woodcock money.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, yeah. And he sent it to me. He sent it me in FLAC and in the OGG Vorbis, the OGG Vorbis format.
Yeah.
I just drug those into the main root directory, started the Scum VM up, and it boop, just like that,
just
started playing
it.
That music. And it was so much better after playing it with the default music.
That's the way to do it. I did the same, and that is absolutely 100% the way to do it. Now, if you just fine with reading the text and don't give a crap about the audio, fine, whatever. You just get the free version and play. But I think that stuff enhances it a lot.
It really gives you the mood. And it's good because Scum, we talk about this about a lot of CD games that are on consoles and stuff. The sound mixing is can be questionable during the 90s where you have really bad sound mixing, and luckily Scum VM has built into it F5. I was constantly going that F5 for saving and adjusting music level and sound effects and suggesting all that stuff so that it's
are they nice still pretty active in keeping that up and updating it and doing forks and all that stuff of the Scum VM
as far
stuff?
As I've seen it look, I downloaded the latest because I was just making sure it all worked on the most latest one. It worked fine. The one that comes with Steam, I think, is a little bit older version.
Yeah,
but you can still access it if you don't want to install Scum as a separate thing. If you do get this free version, just add it to your library on Steam.
Yeah.
You can go into your common files under Steam and you can actually launch Scum VM from there. It installs it for you. And you can add more games to your library from there if you'd like.
Is that, is that 1080p or 1080 snowboarding playing on your
N64? Yeah, that is 1080. Very good. Yes. I love to turn, this is like my favorite. So this is 1080 on the GameCube.
Yeah. GameCube game. That was called Avalanche something.
Yeah, I believe you're right. I think it's Avalanche, but it is a
1080 skiing Avalanche or something. Yeah, whatever it was.
Right, right. Yeah. But it's got all that great 90s music. Mm-hmm. And I lead this thing on loop. Like if we weren't talking right now, I'd have my music turned up and I'd be listening to this. Because it's so much fun to hear all these
big
great music and turn around and seeing these guys just hitting the snow.
Yeah, I loved it. Both those games. I just escaped into those games. Loved them so much. Anyway, just had to ask.
We're gonna do
total side
eventually.
Note. They made another game in 92 that's worth mentioning called Lure of the Temptress, point and click adventure. It came out in 92, like we said, same people. And this is really their big debut. A lot of people think this is the true classic. I talked to a couple of our listeners during the week. They're like, well, that's the game you should talk about.
Right.
I'm like, I don't think anybody knows what Lure of the Temptress is. For good or for bad. I had never even heard of this shit. So this was new to me.
Right.
But it looks good. I mean, it looks like fun. It'll be worth checking out if you're really into these, you know?
You know, we talk about the two biggies, Sierra and Lucas and Revolution. There's a couple of people vying for third place. Mm-hmm. And as I did my research this week, I really feel like Revolution Software was doing some pretty big work, working towards being third in that market. And I definitely want to go back and play Lure of the Temptress and hopefully get a chance to talk a little bit about, talk more about Tony Warren, or since I have an opportunity to buy the book and read it. I've only read an excerpt so far. And he's also working on a game called Wormhole Dungeon.
Oh, okay.
And it's still in development right now. And I don't think he's found a place for the project. I don't think he's kickstarted or anything like that, but it's supposed to be launched in 2024. But this guy's been doing the podcast circuit, you know, talking to people, doing interviews, talking about his time there and talking about the missteps that led to the eventual departure from Revolution Software. Mm-hmm. And how games themselves were, how game studios and records music industry was working at mm-hmm. the time, because that, you know, it's Virgin, all sure. that stuff kind of blurs and crosses places.
Oh yeah. What looked like
good read.
Virgin Interactive. What a story that is on its own. There's a lot of weird shit went down with that. So this is called Wormhole Dungeon. I'm looking at their website. They don't have a date, but it looks like this. Oh, it says coming in 2024.
Guaranteed style arcade adventure.
It says a big demo coming. There is a Kickstarter early access thing. They have vague plans for Dreamcast Amiga ports. That's a weird range. Isn't
that amazing? There's still, I love the fact that people are there's enough things out there, development tools that you can develop games for Dreamcast and Amiga and Nintendo NES and all these other systems that you can make games for and put them on physical media and ship them to people.
Yeah, this looks like fun.
The Atari Age stuff is great.
And this is him doing the whole thing. Yeah. He designed it, coded it, all of it. He says, I absolutely guarantee there was no generative AI used in the making of this game. Also says no in-app purchases. I like that. That's cool.
Yeah, he's old school, man. He loves programming. And I had kind of learned that as I was reading.
Look at else he says. This is great. So he says no generative AI. Then he says no in-app purchases. Fine. Then he says free from the tyranny of DLC and dark patterns.
Yeah, I love it.
This guy's got opinions.
Old school. He's like, yeah, he's got opinions, and I love it.
I like it too. That's awesome. I'm ready to play. I'll play that game. Hell yeah, bring it on.
Yeah,
go to let's see, it's on itch.io. Wormhole Dungeon. Just search for it, Google it, and you'll find it. Or DuckDuckGo it if you don't like Google today. Like we're feeling a little rat reasty.
Yeah, like I'm not gonna Google ever again. Okay, I will, but
I probably won't. I haven't used Google in years.
For the next 24 hours I won't Google
I haven't used them in years, and I'm not telling you that just to say it. That's for real. And I haven't even made like a stink about it. It's just I just went, oh, I kind of like DuckDuckGo, I'm gonna use this for a while, then it's stuck. I just haven't used anything else.
Yeah,
so I don't feel like I'm missing anything.
I don't use Google unless I need a specific it usually has to do with like getting something specific for programming or something like that. Like if I'm having a specific era, like I'm having I'm trying to track down through logs and stuff. I still haven't found anything better than Google for that, but I'm sure I could, if I put the work in. DuckDuckGo is a great place to go though.
Yeah.
And that I'm a little bit apprehensive about things like the Brave browser. I use it. I like it. DuckDuckGo, I use it, I like it, but I'm always a little apprehensive when they go, we don't do anything with our data, we're perfect, we're pristine, and I'm like, yeah.
You don't trust it, do you?
I still don't trust it. I'm like, at least with Google, I know they're still in my shit. I mean, I like know Google's listening.
Oh, no,
like,
yeah, they're right now, they're listening, sure. Here's the thing, though, right. So I use Firefox as my browser, DuckDuckGo for my search engine. What's the other thing?
And your Steam retro emu for your Steam Deck.
Yeah, of course, my Steam Deck.
Which is it? No, it's Emu Deck.
Emu Deck. No, that's it.
Yeah.
Emu Deck? No, that's Emu Retro shit. Emu Deck. What is that called? Hold on. Emu deck. Yeah, that is it.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound right. Yeah, it doesn't sound right at all.
It doesn't sound right, though, does it? No.
No, it doesn't. Those guys are great. Emu deck does stuff for your swing deck, your Steam deck.
Your swing deck.
They also have stuff for the new what do you call it from what's their names, the I or the Rock Rog, whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah. Rog Ally.
Rog Ally.
You know what? Me and if you're ever listening to this podcast,
yeah,
we have time slotted this podcast near the end of the day. Yeah. So me and Scott are always brain dead by the time we get here. We do all this great research and we have all this great energy, but then when you start trying to pull names after. How many podcasts you had today?
A lot. Today was a lot. Things. Yeah, it's a lot today.
Yeah.
My brain's kind of mush at this point. But it's okay.
That's why we depend on our notes.
Yeah, that's why our notes are here. We've been keeping meticulous ones all week so that we won't confuse any of you. All right, go play the games. They're fantastic. Beneath a Steel Sky and the new game that's out now. I am actually curious to play it. I might actually pull the trigger because I've owned it on Steam forever. It's Steam Deck ready. I should just play it. Why don't I play it?
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to do that. Now, this.
Destroy it.
Hey guys, guess what? It's time for us to play Guess My Game. And it's a little game we play where Brian and I play some old audio from an old game and we try to guess what it is. We both know what year and what platform. And we also have five choices each. Mine is also, every single game I mention here is all in the same year to try to confuse you. Okay?
Ooh.
Yeah, I didn't even go out of the year here. So Brian,
I do the same thing, by the way. I stay in the same year and the same platform. Just in case you have some familiarity with one of the games.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
I will mix them sometimes, but today is definitely like that. So I'm going to go ahead and start with my audio. The year is 1997, and the platform is the Windows/PC platform. Okay? Ooh. This was a PC game, and it was 97. Here is your audio right here.
What began as a conflict over the transfer of consciousness from flesh to machines escalated into a war which has decimated a million worlds.
Sounds like the game we play today. But with a lot of wars.
Got a lot of wars in it. All right, here are your choices. While I play this in the background. It's all just battle music here. All right. Let's see here. Let me know this shit in here. Yeah, just a lot of that kind of stuff. Here are your choices, Brian. A, Tobal 2, T-O-B-A-L 2, okay? Tobal 2.
Tobly.
B, Einhander. C, Colony Wars. Or D, Total Annihilation. Again, your options are Tobal 2, A.
Einhander!
Bean Einhander. C, Colony Wars. And D, Total Annihilation. Which do you think it is?
Well, I'm gonna rule out Tobal 2 because I don't know what the hell that is.
Oh, all right. I know what that is.
But yeah, I'm gonna rule out B, Einhander, because I feel like with a name like that, there should be a German guy speaking right now in my ears. Yeah. So I'm narrowing it down to C, D, Colony Wars or a Total Annihilation. I think I might have heard him say I'm not sure if I imagine it, but I've heard Colony and Annihilation somewhere in Wars, and so boy. Now it's all just getting confusing.
Well, here, I'll play that guy again.
What began as a conflict over the transfer of consciousness from flesh to machines escalated into a war which has decimated a million worlds.
That's all you get from him. Chat leaning Colony Wars for sure. Somebody said G Police, but that is not on the list. So that doesn't count.
Yeah. Anyway. I don't think Scott's pulling a fast one like E. You can't see it's hidden.
Yeah.
All right, so the chat says Colony Wars, but it sounds like it's destroying everything. But then again, when I think of colonies, I think of just, you know, one planet. Mm. But this could be a larger colony, and I'm just dragging on forever, so I'm just going to say, is D, Total Annihilation.
Is it Total Annihilation? It is indeed. Nicely done.
Yes.
This game came out in 97. It came out on PCs. It was a big deal. Everybody loved this game. You had to totally upgrade your PC to play it or else you were screwed because it was a monster.
Total upgrade for Total big time. Annihilation.
And that game inspired all kinds of stuff later that, fed on it. But the idea of that game was like most RTSs were like, well, you can only have so many units out at once and you can have up to 100, but it can only be that. Like they had these limits. This game had no freaking limits. It's just like send a billion of these little Jeeps in there. No problem. Unless your computer can't freaking handle it. you know. It reminded me, though, the way that VO worked at the top, it reminds me a lot of the guy from Colony Wars, which is why I stuck that in there.
So. Yeah. Late 90s audio was fan-freaking-tastic.
Yeah.
Compared to some of the earlier
90s 99, stuff. 97 to 99, we had kind of caught up. We were doing okay by then, I think.
Yeah.
Brian, all right, well done. You did it. Let's see if I can do the same here for yours. What's my platform? What's my year? What's my stuff?
The year is 1992, and you got your Super Nintendo Entertainment System out, and you're about to play one of these games.
All right, 92.
Audio, please.
Here we go.
Your choices are A, Soul Blazer.
Yeah.
B, Cybernator.
Yeah.
C, Space Megaforce. D, Warp Speed.
Oh my gosh.
All these names sound so similar to all these. They sound like a bunch of generic bullshit names. If you went to AI right now and said, make up some bullshit space names, space game names for me, this would be the list you'd
get. Yeah, it's like a mobile game name generator. It's what you've made. All right. Oh, this doesn't sound familiar at all, but I...
No.
For whatever reason...
I think I made this too hard.
You might have made it a little hard, but I'm going to say that of all of these games, the one that it rings a bell the most is C. But let me just think for a second. Soul Blazer. Don't remember what that was. Cybernator, no memory of that. Warp Speed, do not remember that. Cyber Mega or Space Megaforce kind of rings a bell. And this sounds like... Sounds like a bunch of weird anime characters going, all right, we're doing the Megaforce. Let's go to space.
It's like somebody just did their zipper up.
Yeah. I'm done peeing. Let's go to space. I'm gonna go ahead and say
I'm gonna say it's
C, Space Megaforce.
Scott, give yourself.
Damn it. What is it?
Oh no, I didn't make this too hard though. I was worried that I might make this too hard. It is B, Cybernator.
I don't know what that is. Why do I not know that?
I don't know. There was a glut of these games on the SNES during this time.
Let me see.
And maybe I just happened upon Cybernator because I thought it sounded pretty cool. I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. And then I started looking for other games that were like it. This thing, people love this game. Came out late in 1992.
Let's see. Konami?
NCSoft did some development on it too, I believe. You remember those guys?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I know this with the mech that jumps. I played this once wondering what it was, but I didn't really know because I had never played it before.
So
it looks awesome. Yeah.
I want to cover this one day.
This might be worth looking at more because, I mean, I don't know how popular it was. It doesn't sound like it was, but.
It does. It must not have been. And there was so much competition in that space, apparently, with Soul Blazer, Space Megaforce, Warp Speed. Those all kind of look like this game. Except some of them were like Bullet Hell type games.
I need Sounded more. Like it, you know what I need more of? I need more mech shit in my life.
Mech shit.
For real. The new MechWarrior 5, Mercenaries, Clan is like a co-op new thing they're doing, a single-player focused co-op thing. And I cannot wait for that because it just is mechs and I'm riding around in a mech, you know?
Look how freaking awesome this one is, though. This thing we're talking about, Cybernator, with he's got his jetpack. He's got his it's very much a bullet hell, but side scrolling, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's still picking up all his little power ups and stuff. Looks just like a freaking
Cybernator.
You know, bullet hell game.
Let me see how this did review wise, because I wonder if it was just
reviews.
Did it?
Yeah, it did. Really
in Japan, it was called Assault Suits Valken.
Oh, I like that name even better, actually.
Yeah, that's weird.
Oh, there was a movie the previous year called Cybernator. Maybe we should do a double up. Maybe we should do it. I don't think it was related to it, though.
Yeah.
I think it was just, yeah.
Oh, here it is. Mostly positive reviews on release. Famitsu gave it a 32 out of 40, which is pretty high for them. Let's see, call it close to perfection from the graphics to the music, an intense story, considered it a possible candidate for Game of the Year that year. I need to check it out.
I looked at it,
but you know, I didn't do much.
Yeah. A good indication of a game that has a story behind it is a pretty long Wikipedia page. It's not huge, but it's pretty good. And there's a lot of articles and references talking about it. So there may be some story here.
Yeah. Might be something there. I should check it out. Well done for you. Bad for me. I got one of these. That's okay, though, because now we have this.
Welcome to the treasure room.
We got a brand new patron who called in on the hotline, 801-471-0462, and he says this about our pre-show. Enjoy.
Hi, this is Mike. I just signed up for a bunch of your shows. This is specifically for Play Retro. So, yeah, it's the first week I signed up for the Kajigger there where you get the pre-show separate, the bonus. Wasn't expecting as much child pornography talk. Probably you want to play this, if you do, on the pre-show. You know, I don't want to throw that out there, but I love the show. You guys are awesome. I'm glad I signed up for everything because the bonus stuff is great. That's all I had. I just thought it was funny to be the first week talking about all that. Play Retro!
That's right. Now, remember, the important
very rare
thing
for us to talk about.
Well, yeah, but
in any context.
But hold on, yeah, that's the point. Is this right. Was very specific context of us being very condemning of the practice, and I don't even remember the full context of why it came up. But this was not us going, so what's the deal with child pornography? It wasn't like that.
So what's all of this stuff I hear about the child pornography?
Yeah, it was us going, that stuff's horrible, and people who do that are horrible. And we were talking about how horrible it was. So just for clarity, that's what our pre-show was about. It was a little bit random day, you know.
I think it started out as something maybe I'd seen on TV or so. I don't remember exactly what happened, but yeah, we were just, you know, just going rounds.
We went places. We went places. But it is pretty funny. Your very first episode, and you hear this thing.
Right.
You're like, what the frick is this?
This is pre-show?
Yeah. This is retro games? How is it a retro game to talk about that? Weird.
What was your name again? I missed it. What was
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike. Yeah.
Very good. Thank you, Mike. And thank you for being patient and also listening to the other pre-show so you know that's just not the content.
Yeah. Right? Thank you, Mike. Today's was way less of that. Today was about, what did we do today? I don't remember.
I don't remember at all. Keyboards this week.
It was like an hour ago.
It might be anything.
It was about an hour ago, and I don't remember whatever the hell it was. You guys remember what we talked about pre-show in the chat? Do you guys can you help me here?
I don't remember. Oh, I talked about Sister Cities. We talked about
Sister Cities and where you grew up and all that parking lot, all that.
It's great.
Yeah, it was a great talk.
My parking lot, place I grew up, and what if you drop the first letter off the U.S. states names and stuff? It was a lot of fun.
Yep. This is all true. Our brains are on half mode today. All right. Well, there's that stuff. Fun stuff to be had. Let's dive into this real quick.
Ludicrous kill.
Hey, it's time to get a quick Unreal report.
Up.
Unreal 99 and Unreal Tournament 2004. Are we playing today? What are our plans today? Are we playing tonight?
That's entirely up to you. We haven't set anything solid down, but it's always a possibility.
It's always on the table, right? Yeah.
It's always on the table.
I think we'll get in there.
UT99, we used to play on Monday night, 6:30 PM Eastern time. This week, not a lot of changes in the top five, other than me and Scott are out of the top five completely. We're now down to 7 and 8, by the way. Jeez. I'm 7. Scott's 8. Suck it.
Because I haven't played UT99 in about a month. So it's my fault.
It doesn't matter what your excuse is. You're still lagging behind.
I know.
The sun was in my eyes. Secrecy top is number 1. Flap Jackson, Upright Knight at number 3. Denier at 4. And Surge at number 5. And me and Scott down at 7 and 8.
Boo.
Now, on Friday nights, we play the Unreal Tournament 2004. We've been really enjoying playing the Assault mode on that. It's a lot of freaking fun.
Yeah.
And Sick Recce, number 1 there. Sick Recce is really good. And sometimes you go, Sick Recce's a little too good, right? So the problem is, Sick Recce's got an amazing memory for maps. So if it is a map, and this is where me and Scott lag behind the most, and most of us, because we've forgotten all the maps. Secrecy remembers all the freaking maps and can get there in a hurry, especially in Assault mode. Number 1.
To say she is dominant in this game is an understatement ever made.
Like, yes,
absolutely dominant in our games. That's unbelievable.
Map memory is so important.
Yeah.
2 is Try to Kill Everyone. 3, Frog Pants, still in the top 5. Brack Flack, and guess who's number 5? Me.
Oh, your look at friend, you. A couple effect. Times down behind me. It's interesting.
Okay. It's okay.
Well, anyway, we're going to shoot some people in the face coming up. So please play tonight with us. That would be wonderful. About an hour after.
RetroGIB.com, RetroGib.com for all the details.
That is correct.
Got to get it, all that good stuff.
That's right. Quick note, next week we are hitting the Wolverine of our lives. That's right. Mm-hmm. The 8-bit, the 16-bit, the movie tie-ins, all of it. We're going to talk about...
Are we going to do all of it? Woo, Scott's talking big, baby.
Dude, Wolverine for the 91 NES game was a big deal for me. I like that game a lot. The SNES game, Adamantium Rage. Very good game.
I have that one. My son gave it to me for Christmas.
Yep.
The year before last.
Wolverine's Rage, X-Men from 2001. It's a Game Boy Color game. Mm. Quite good. We're going to talk about all these Wolverine games. And the reason we're doing that is there's a lot of hype right now around the new Disney Plus series and bringing back X-Men 97 to the world. And, you know, big part of that is...
Have you seen the latest episode?
No, I'm behind.
The latest episode at this point. The fourth episode, spoiler, not bad spoilers, but this is say there's supposed to be some references to the X-Men arcade beat 'em up game, and I can't wait to fall into that. Yeah.
That's great. Can't wait to see. I didn't know that. I really liked it. I've only seen the first, and I loved it. I got to catch up, though. Well, no, I guess I've seen the first two because I watched them with you. So yeah, 3 and 4 are on my radar. Be watching that soon. And we're going to talk about Wolverine, the one X-Men everyone seems to love the most. He's your big breakout star of the X-Men, you know? Ooh. There's a lot of good X-Men, but when you think of him, who do you think of? Well, you think of Wolverine. And we're going to think of him fondly in the video game sense. So that's next week right here on Play Retro.
I hope.
In the meantime, please make sure.
Bub.
Yeah, I hope so too, bub. With my cigar hanging out. Go to patreon.com/playretro and be like these brand new folks. Matt Stanley Webb, Jesse Freak-Elite Summer?
Yeah, Freak-Elite. We know Freak-Elite.
Okay, Freak-Elite. Jeff Rose and Joe McNally, all of these fine folks are brand new people over there that are now getting no commercials ever. They're getting pre-show content every week, even the weird stuff. They get it all, and there are people we love, and we'll love you, too, if you sign up today at patreon.com/playretro. Our website is frogpants.com/playretro, and that is it for us. Brian, is there anything else you'd like to say to these people before we cut them off?
Yeah, my streaming schedule returns to normal next week, so check it out, twitch.tv/Brian Dunaway. Lots of times I play these games online, so you can watch me play. So next week, if you want to watch me make a fool of myself playing some Wolverine games, tune in.
I want to see that. I want to see you make a fool of yourself no matter what you're playing. Anyway, that'll do it for us. Between now and then, everybody go play something retro, and we'll see you next time.
Get more at frogpants.com.
You are Mr. Potato Head.